and welcome once again to What's Out There, the paranormal podcast from Out There Paranormal, and chatting for you tonight on this top secret episode, we have myself, Nigel.
And myself, Juliet.
You told me off, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, no, actually. No, I didn't tell you off. Okay, I made some comments because you've worked jolly hard on writing this podcast up. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it might be a little bit intense and in depth because you've got all the knowledge of the military history and it's your specialist area and stuff that you love. And I was just a little bit worried that people might get lost generally because I got lost. And I know it's not difficult for me to get lost because I can get lost in a paper bag, let's be honest. But that was it. That was just my only worry.
I went a bit highbrow.
I did. I
know.
Highbrow, big brow, monobrow.
There are lots of military terms in this podcast this evening, and I may have got a little bit overexcited, as I do when I get onto military subjects, like Jules said. Basically, we're talking about psychic soldiers.
Now, you have to watch out for us psychic people. We can be quite dangerous.
After researching this, yes, you bloody well can. I'm really rather wary of you in the future,
right?
Because
look out.
Some of the stuff, researching this, some of the weird and wonderful stuff that I found out is like, oh my God, can they really do that?
Can they
really do this?
We can zap you. Easy.
I'm really quite scared about this
don't
now.
Don't upset me.
Because one of the stories later on when we get to towards the end of the podcast is going to make you think, I really hope she can't do that because I know you could,
probably can't, but there we are. I like people to think we can.
Exactly. Shouldn't send anything, should we?
I know.
Should have kept that quiet.
Shh.
Had them all scared.
Secret.
Watch out. We've got a secret weapon.
I know.
It's Jules.
It's not much of a secret weapon, is it? It's a bit tragic, actually, isn't it?
Oh, bless you. Well, I don't know, though. If you can weaponize it.
Yeah, right.
And point it towards your enemy and fire away.
Putin, look out.
Exactly.
Wouldn't that be good?
That'd be really cool.
Cool, yeah.
Come on, Jules. You can do it.
You reckon?
If you concentrate hard enough.
Okay. I'm thinking.
Thinking.
I'm thinking Putin.
I'm
oh,
thinking.
God, I don't want to think about Putin.
No, that's not good, is it? You got those visions again, didn't you?
Good Lord.
Honestly, this is one hell of a rabbit hole for us to fall down. Basically, I had a good look around, did a lot of research, but I just can't do this topic full justice in one episode. Whether we go back to it later on, I don't know. But what I have done is touched around the edges
on
some of the topics, and there is a lot to cover. So all we're going to do basically is sort of give you a feel for the world of the psychic soldiers and psychotronic warfare. And
scary stuff.
It is very scary stuff. Some of it is completely mental. Some of it is completely amazing, and some of it is just, what the fuck?
Exactly.
Okay, so
where are we going to go first, Nige?
We're going to go and see our old friend, Mr. Putin.
He's not my friend. Is he your friend?
No, he's not my friend.
No, he's not my friend either.
No, they were our friends once.
Not anymore.
Before the Cold War.
I'm not getting political, but I don't like him very much.
We don't like the Soviets.
Nope.
Or the Russians, but
nope.
Once upon a time they were called the Soviet Union.
They were.
And they liked to dabble.
Yes, they did.
Psychic experiments.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
It is really, really fascinating.
But just considering the put-downs that our psychics get out there in the community, and we do get a lot of flack, it's quite interesting to hear that there was quite a lot of experiments done.
Yeah, and really sort of highbrow stuff as well, and really intense experiments. And there were some of it, when we get further on, as you'll see, some of it actually has got proof that it actually did work. And that's
somebody
the scary
does.
Bit of it. Yeah.
I mean, talking as somebody that has, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, psychic abilities, you know, I don't like using that term, but I often wonder where it comes from. And I mean, there's got to be a scientific explanation as to what happens and why it happens and how it happens.
Yeah.
There's got to be.
We just haven't found it yet.
Not yet, but I mean, I am honest as the day is long, 100% in what I do. And it would be really nice if we had some kind of scientific validation to prove that there is some truth in it.
Yeah, I mean, we've got got proof. I've seen proof myself with some of the things that you've said to me that later on I found out when I've researched, gone back and thought, well, how did you find this out? How did you know that? And in amongst the bits and pieces that you've given, you can sort of, you can piece the story together and find out that you've actually managed to find, you know, small pieces of information that actually fit into what we're experiencing at the time. So it's really, really interesting.
What I find really fascinating, though, is when I tune in and I work at, you know, a particular site or whatever it is that Nigel takes me to, the information I get a lot of pictures in my mind, and it's almost like a jigsaw puzzle and trying to connect all the pieces to make them make sense. And what I don't understand is why it's always fragmented. It always comes through like little bits. You never get the entire picture.
No.
And I think that is why people are dubious about it, because they're like, yeah, right. Well, you know, if you were really a psychic, a true psychic, you would have all the names, all the dates of birth, all the locations, et cetera, et cetera. But you don't get it.
I makes me wonder whether
you
or not.
Do.
It maybe it's just small pieces of people's memory that are left behind.
Maybe.
Small pieces of information that are just recorded in that place.
Possibly.
And it's like playing a tape recording, for instance, where the microphone's not working, and you'll get a little bit of music and then it'll stop and make crackly noise and get nothing, and then you'll get another little bit and then it'll stop and you'll get nothing, and then you'll get another little bit. But as the tune plays along, you can sort of listen to it and hear exactly what the tune is, but you don't get enough of it to actually hear the whole song. You just get small bits. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. It's just, I just find it sometimes a little bit frustrating, you know, because I'd love to be able to get all the information and say, right, A, B, C, D, and E, you know.
But yeah.
I just don't.
But it does really wear you out when you do it. Mm. And I've brought you home for investigations when you were just flat out tired, but you've had a really sort of heavy night.
Ugh, and you're always tired.
I know, but I mean, really, really, you're like, you know,
I'm a single mum with two kids. Yeah, I'm always flipping tired.
I was picking it up, Jules, just saying. Sometimes when you come back, though, you are really, really tired.
Yeah, it does drain you, actually. Yeah. I think it's because when you tune in and you concentrate and you want to make sure as hard as you can and as much as you can that the information that you're giving is correct. And it makes sense, because sometimes things come in different order. It's not always clear. It's jumbled up, you know. And a lot of the time people will say to me, you know, I've had people look at me and go, that's not right. It doesn't make any sense. But then what you have to do is kind of look at the information, almost write it down and see if there's any connection and how it can make sense and make it all fit together, like bits of a jigsaw.
I'm not saying that we actually force the bits together and make fit the narrative.
No,
we don't.
You can't.
Because some bits you can think, well, okay, I'm not sure entirely certain how that bit fits in, but that bit there makes sense.
Yeah. Because you've said to me before, we've been out on investigations, well, I'm not sure that that makes sense to me. But then quite often you will go away and do a bit more research and then something will come back to you and you'll say, well, actually, this happened. So, yes, that does make sense. But it's just so fragmented. And quite often people will say to me, you've got the information wrong. It's not right. But it's just trying to make it as clear as I possibly can coming from me. And it's not the information I'm getting that's wrong. It's quite often the way I interpret it that's wrong, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah. You've seen the part of the vision, but the vision's so quick, you can't actually get all the information. So
I don't always, I don't always interpret what I sense, what I see, what I feel as absolutely right. And that's my fault and that's my error. It's not to say the information that's coming through to me is wrong.
No.
You know, but I just do my best. Yeah. I do my best. And when I was training, my God, this is many years ago. When I was learning and training, there was another psychic that had a lot more experience and he was mentoring me. I was always worried about saying what I felt and saying what I saw. And he said to me, just tell it as you see it, tell it as you feel it, and be completely honest about everything. Because if you do that, 9 times out of 10 is right.
Yeah.
If you start trying to make it fit, make it make sense and stuff like that, that's when you run into problems. He said, don't do that. Say what you feel, say what you sense, say what you see, and leave it as that.
Yeah.
and let somebody else write it down, make notes or interpret it.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, do you know what, was the best advice that he ever gave me.
It's really sound advice.
Yeah.
The reason why we've sort of gone off on this sort of tangent is basically what Jules is talking about is the kind of research they were looking into. They were looking into telepathy, remote viewing, that kind of stuff where people are concentrating on an image, trying to find something, looking at it, and then explain it to the person.
What are those cards that you can...
Xena cards.
Thank you. They're the ones. I can never remember the name.
Xena cards, yeah.
Yeah. They use them in Ghostbusters,
they do
they?
Indeed.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
With the electric shock.
That's right.
I got that one.
You know.
I've got a set of Xena cards.
Can I have a go?
I'll put you stuck on them. I can make up an electric shock machine as well.
No. Thank you.
Just the Xena cards.
Yes, please.
Okay, yeah, we can do Xena cards.
And if I get rewarded, can I have a sweetie?
Yes.
Thank you.
You can. Or a glass of wine.
Oh, do you know what? Yes.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Oh, do you know what? Red?
Red?
Yes, please.
Yeah, big glass of red.
19 crimes?
No problem at all.
Yes, please. Thank you very much.
Get a couple of bottles in. We might do well on that.
Wow, a couple of bottles. Perfect.
Could be an interesting session.
Yes, it could.
Where were we? Soviets.
Yes.
Let's get back to where we were. Psychic soldiers. Okay. And the Soviets. Soviet research on telepathy dates from the early 1920s, when at various institutes, experiments were conducted focused mainly around the field of telepathic communication. The Soviets, it seems, appear to have been fascinated with telepathy, which they called biological radio communication. And their experiments included some rather out of the ordinary stuff. First out of the box, we have Vladimir Durov, a famous animal trainer. Durov became known for his ability to communicate with trained animals by mental suggestion. Working with another Soviet scientist, here we go, Bernardovich Kaczynski.
Oh, so usually do that to me.
I know, you got your own bag of it, didn't you? Because you could read that bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Durov's home became a centre for research on animal psychology.
Now, to use his mind to give a command to a dog, Durov would start by looking deeply into the dog's eyes. He would direct all his mental powers towards imaging the exact task the dog was to perform, as if he were looking through the dog's own eyes. After implanting the idea in the dog's brain, Durov would give the order to act it out.
Now, as you can imagine, this process was not always successful. Overall, Kaczynski reports 696 of their experiments with mental suggestions to dogs were successful. 582 were not. According to a zoological statistician at Moscow State University, analysis of the results showed that the dogs' responses were not accidental, but produced under the influence of the experimenters. Telepathy apparently worked with dogs. Least.
See, and that's not even people.
I know.
See. So now, of course, telepathic communication with dogs was not the main goal of the Soviet institutes. Oh no. They also experimented with human subjects, and some of the experiments they performed were rather interesting indeed. So here's a little taster of the fun and games that the Soviet Union were having by messing about with people's minds.
Hey, in one experiment, a girl, dosed with the psychedelic drug mescaline, attempted to see into sealed boxes, whose contents were neither known to her nor to the person conducting the experiment. In 10 such tests, she achieved 2 complete and 5 partial successes. That's 7 out of 10.
Yeah, it's not too bad,
is it? That's pretty impressive, yeah. Mm.
So it was claimed that USSR researchers successfully taped the central nervous system signals of a man who was playing piano. Now, later they were able to broadcast those messages back into the arms of a different person who had never played piano before. That person would then be enabled to play difficult music, but also would retain some of this skill as permanent learning.
it's my turn for a hang on. So they're saying they can tape someone's nervous system and record the waves that are in it and then play that into someone else, and then they can actually then play a piano the same as the other piano, even though they can't play a piano.
I'm not convinced on that one.
Bit of a leap there. But there we go. The Soviets have already experimented with the use of flashing lights for the purpose of eliciting behavioural changes in human targets, and have used these lights on a number of occasions. There have been persistent reports of unusual flashing lights emanating from Soviet naval vessels and long-range aircraft. Such activities have coincided with the US and NATO surveillance operations conducted from interceptor aircraft and naval vessels. In some cases, personnel have been temporarily blinded and disorientated by various intensities of colours or continuous or intermittently flashing lights during nocturnal missions.
I'm not surprised. You would be blinded, won't you, if somebody's flashing lights in your face?
But I think what they were doing is, I think by flashing them in a certain sort of pattern in a certain way, they could actually sort of confuse the people on the other side. You got it, you see.
Right.
That's the way they talk.
Mm-hmm. Fears of Soviet psychic abilities, and in particular, telepathic hypnosis, which allegedly allowed the USSR to telepathically induce sleep in individuals and then rouse them from over 1,000 miles away. K.O. Kotkov, allegedly a star Soviet psychologist, was particularly intimidating to US authorities given his apparent ability to telepathically obliterate an experimental subject's consciousness. Remember?
Consciousness. I'm glad I gave you that one.
Podcast. Yeah,
thank you very much. You can have that one.
You know, I'm not sure about this. Wait a minute. So somebody's sleeping and they can wake them up from another country?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. And they can also put them to sleep as well.
Not convinced.
Oh, yeah.
No. I mean, come on, really?
Possibly. I don't know.
Hmm.
Now, the Soviets are also taken with the possibility of psychokinesis, using mental imagery to move objects, and one well-known exponent of this art was one Ninel Kulagina.
Now, Kulagina heard a radio report about a woman who could see colours with her fingers and declared, "I can do that," recalling that while convalescing in hospital, that's Izzy the ghost cat in the background.
Having a scratch.
While convalescing in hospital, she had been able to pick the coloured threads she needed for her embroidery from an opaque bag without looking at them. Now, to convince her disbelieving husband, she demonstrated this ability while blindfolded. In repeated experiments, she showed that as well as correctly identifying hidden colours, she could read text, discern the dates on coins, and accurately reproduce simple drawings made by him in a separate room. See, that's good.
Yeah.
That I like.
That's really interesting, yeah. And these experiments came to light some weeks later when the couple told a doctor about them. 2 decades of investigation on her additional aptitude for psychokinesis followed, mostly conducted by Russian scientists, but also intermittently by 5 Western scientists who became aware of Kulagina through a 1968 documentary film.
Now, typically, Kulagina sat at a small table and was observed to move small objects placed in front of her without touching them. Apparently, by a process of mental concentration. Now, the objects included items such as matchsticks, an empty box of matches, a cigarette, an empty metal salt shaker, and a wristwatch. And the usual starting distance between her and the objects was about 0.5 meter, but success from up to 2 meters away were reported.
She was also observed to spin a compass needle 360 degrees in either direction, stop a pendulum or change the direction of its swing, move a hydrometer floating in water within a wire cage, prevent a scale from unbalancing when extra weight was placed on one of its pans.
Kulagina was reported to have stopped the beating of a disembodied frog's heart and to have revived a fish that were near dead, including one that was floating upside down and another lying motionlessly on the aquarium floor. they swam for several minutes. Hang on a minute. Right, okay. I know a little bit about fish.
Okay.
Okay. As a kiddie, I used to have fish in a fish tank. Okay. And, you know, it didn't do too badly. Swim bladder. Have you heard of swim bladder in fish?
Yeah.
Where they swim upside down and they act like they're dead?
Yeah.
If you give a fish crushed peas. Now, a fish man in Great Yarmouth told me this. Who used to run aquariums, ladies and gents.
This is intriguing stuff.
Right, okay. We are going off at a tangent here. It's quite important. A swim bladder can make a fish look like it's dead, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, if you give a fish crushed peas, it can help with swim bladder and turn the fish the right way up and can make it better again, okay? So it could be that this fish floating upside down and lying motionlessly probably wasn't dead.
Mm-hmm.
Probably has something like swim bladder. And all she had to do was slip it a pee with no one looking.
Slip it a surreptitious pee.
Well, yeah, right. And then all of a sudden, okay, the fish is, do you know what I mean? Not sure about
You're
that
not sure one. About You don't like that one, do you? No.
Well, peas.
It's right you saying, questioning these things. However, this all seemed too good to be true, and accusations were made that Coolagina manipulated objects by means of magnets concealed.
And peas,
yeah. By means of magnets concealed in a clothing or vagina.
Really?
Have you ever hidden a magnet up your vagina?
Or a pee?
Yeah. Or by definitely using disguised threads. But none of these have been substantiated, however.
Okay. Now, the Soviets were more inclined than American scientists to believe that paranormal phenomena might be the result of bioenergetics or the energy given off by the metabolic process of living things. This theory stated that people exuded bioplasma. I love that sound.
It's a nice word, isn't it?
Well, I love the sound, I love the word. A theoretical energy field that, under certain conditions, was capable of emitting charged, coherent radiation beyond the body's surface in the form of electrons and possibly protons.
Although the Soviets did not reach consensus on the existence of bioplasma, the very pursuit of this theory indicates that Soviet parapsychologists were attempting to explain alleged paranormal phenomena with a greater degree of Why did I type this word, George?
Specificity
than their Western counterparts. Honestly, there's always one that I can't say.
It's how many takes me to say
I don't know. I just sometimes I get a word that I cannot say.
Oh God! What was it?
Consciousness.
Oh, that and was a funny one.
This one is. I still can't even say it, George.
Specificity. It took me a few goes.
I've got it. Anyway, basically, it means they were looking at it in a greater detail than the Americans. So this section here has really interested me because they're talking about sort of bioplasma and energy fields and things. Which is something that I've always been interested in within the paranormal because we have the ability to produce these sort of energy fields and we've detected energy fields for want of a better purpose when we've been out investigating using the little trifold meter we have, naturally occurring electromagnetic fields rather than ones that are produced by AC current or electrical equipment. So I think the Soviets were on the sort of right course of action with this.
I think you're right. You've actually said to me before that sometimes when we've been investigating, you wondered whether it was me emitting something that was affecting the kit rather than something paranormal happening. And that was one of your queries with me, wasn't it?
We're going to have to do that with that.
What, experiment?
With the tri-field, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll actually rig it up so it's sort of pointing at you and then
see what happens.
If the end, if you're still picking stuff up, will it start going off? That'd be interesting to see that.
Yeah. Let's do it.
There we go.
Okay.
Anyway, back to where we got a bit excited there.
Yeah, right.
So there we go. There are the Soviets messing about with all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff.
And then what we're going to do, we're going to go over across the pond.
We are indeed.
And over to the Americans.
The United States of America, people.
Our friends.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you saying oh yeah for?
Yeah, they're our friends.
They are our friends.
Sometimes.
Oh, they are.
Oh, they are our friends. I know.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, just when you think that the Soviet psychic experiments were batshit crazy. Along comes the United States of America saying, hold my coat. You ain't seen nothing yet.
If there's going to be any batshit crazy, it's going to be the United States.
It's got to be the Americans. Sorry to American listeners, by the way. We're quite happily calling you batshit crazy, but let's be honest, you do some weird stuff.
And some amazing stuff.
They do indeed.
Okay, so let's delve into it.
Okay.
Okay, so where do we begin? I know. Let's start with some simple mind-altering drugs.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Now, in fact, there is a crossover here, as both the USA and the Soviet Union were experimenting in this field. So welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the wonderful world of psychedelic warfare in the guise of MKUltra.
Okay, MKUltra is a blanket term for over 100 different CIA-led programs during the project's duration. In reality, the true nature of these programs is difficult to understand. This is because the CIA destroyed most of the evidence in 1973, leaving a shroud of mystery about the program.
So why did they destroy it?
This is the thing.
Yeah.
There's two popular opinions about why they destroyed it. The first one is because they didn't think it worked and they just wanted to get rid of it because it wasn't, you know, worthwhile keeping it. The second one is, as you read through it, you'll realise, is because they were undertaking some pretty dubious bloody
they
things.
They absolutely were.
With handing these drugs out to people.
Good Lord.
So, yeah, if you sort of carry on, okay. We'll see where we get to.
So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a trip to the 1950s and the 60s, excuse the pun.
Yeah.
The height of the Cold War. The United States government feared that Soviet, Chinese, and North Korean agents were using mind control to brainwash US prisoners of war in Korea. And in response, Alan Dulles, director of the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, approved Project MKUltra in 1953. Now, this covert operation aimed to develop techniques that could be used against Soviet bloc enemies to control human behaviour with drugs and other psychological manipulators.
MKUltra is like a piece of software designed to hack the brain. Through the program, the CIA scanned the human mind in search of vulnerabilities, and psychedelic drugs were the primary key.
So, eat your heart out, Elon Musk. They were there first, these guys. The intent of the project was to study the use of biological and chemical materials in altering human behaviour, according to official testimony of CIA Director Stansfield Turner in 1977. Now, the project was conducted in extreme
Don't say a word.
No. Now, Turner said, because of ethical and legal questions surrounding the program and the negative public response that the CIA anticipated if MKUltra should actually become public.
It's a big old cover-up.
Huh.
Oh, yes.
One of many.
Now, under MKUltra, the CIA gave itself the authority to research how drugs could promote the intoxicating effects of alcohol, render the induction of hypnosis easier, enhance the ability of individuals to withstand privation, torture and coercion, produce amnesia, shock and confusion, and much more. Many of these questions were investigated using unwitting test subjects like drug-addicted prisoners, marginalised sex workers and terminal cancer patients. People who could not fight back, in the words of Sidney Gottlieb, the chemist who introduced LSD to the CIA. Gottlieb is a complete nutter.
That's shocking.
It is shocking. I mean, they're actually experimenting on people who can't.
Oh my God, though, but terminal cancer patients?
I mean, it's yeah.
Oh,
horrendous,
my
isn't it?
God. Okay, so the CIA began to experiment with LSD, and this was under the direction of agency chemist and poison expert Sidney Gottlieb. Now, he believed the agency could harness the drug's mind-altering properties for brainwashing or psychological torture.
Under the auspices of Project MKUltra, the CIA began to fund studies at Columbia University, Stanford University, and other colleges on the effects of the drugs. After a series of tests, the drug was deemed too unpredictable to use in counterintelligence.
I'm not surprised.
It's not surprising, really, is it? Let's be honest, mate. Drop a tab of LSD and then try and get something sensible out of the person who's tripping their bollocks off. LSD was not the only drug used in MKUltra experiments. Here's a great list for you. MDMA, which you might know as E or ecstasy, opiates, methamphetamines, and even magic mushrooms are notable mentions. In addition, scientists performed experiments with hypnosis and behavioural modification techniques.
Okay, now, no one knows the results of the project, as many of MKUltra's records were destroyed in a 1973 purge, and many had been destroyed throughout the program, as a matter of course, probably because they didn't want anyone to know what they were doing.
They didn't want anyone to know what they're up to, yeah.
And the only documents that remained were 8,000 pages of records, mostly financial-based, which did not throw much light on the clandestine operation.
It's disgraceful.
It's shocking.
Really is disgraceful. When it came to light in 77, what they'd been up to, there was a Senate inquiry about it.
I'm not surprised.
And it was really, really awful, the stuff that they were doing. Like I was saying, the subjects that they used.
That's horrific. Right. It's almost going back to Nazi warfare.
Yeah, it's really, really awful. One side project, however, of MKUltra was something called Operation Midnight Climax.
I'll bet it was, especially midnight.
From Chihuahua. Operation Midnight Climax was an MKUltra project in which government-employed prostitutes lured unsuspecting men to CIA safe houses where drug experiments took place.
That's a bit seedy, isn't it?
It's a bit, yeah.
Good Lord.
While intelligence agencies had often used female agents to seduce targets, the CIA wanted to study how sex, especially in combination with drugs, could loosen men's tongues.
Oh, I'm not surprised it did.
Yeah.
Guess it was very successful.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not even going there. The project would involve setting up a CIA-financed bordello in an apartment in the Telegraph Hill section of San Francisco and a similar government-run brothel in New York City's Greenwich Village. In San Francisco, the CIA paid prostitutes $100 for each potential subject they picked up at local bars and lured back to the bordello.
That's not a lot of money, is it?
I suppose you're talking about 1950-60 or so, I suppose it probably was then, yeah.
Okay. So the CIA dosed the men with LSD and then, while at times drinking cocktails behind a two-way mirror, watched the drug's effects on the men's behaviour. Recording devices were installed in the prostitutes' rooms, disguised as electrical outlets. The programme had little oversight, and the CIA agents involved admitted that a freewheeling, party-like atmosphere prevailed. Well, I'm not surprised.
It's brilliant.
Prostitutes, LSD and cocktails.
We're having a wild time here, boys. That's the job that you want, isn't it?
What? No. What are you saying now? Excuse me, Mr. Higgins.
I wasn't saying you, just in person. I was just saying.
Great.
You, as in like a lot of yous.
Flipping hit you around the head with a wet kipper in a minute. Now, with the destruction of the MKUltra documents and recordings, we will sadly never know what insights Midnight Climax was able to provide.
Indeed. Ultimately, the use of LSD for mind control has poor results. Scientists determine the substance is ineffective as a mind control tool, the unpredictability of the drug on subjects being the main reason for this. The drug-induced change of the subject's mental state pollutes the collection process. As a result, intelligence gathered from LSD dose subjects is questionable at best.
Have you been taking something?
Not this evening. Oh, I did have a glass of fizz.
Oh, God. But there is a story, however, that at one point a drug was developed. And this became known by the abbreviation BZ or BZ, believed to be an anticholinergic deliriant, meaning it's related to stuff like antihistamines or more closely to the chemicals in Datura, nightshade, etc.
It was developed for use in warfare. One small dose can incapacitate a person for days, during which they'll be unable to function normally. And not only is it a deliriant, but it can also cause hallucinations. And the hallucinations from anticholinergic drugs are usually quite realistic and often terrifying. The 1990s film Jacob's Ladder is said to be based on this drug, and rumours abound that it was given to American soldiers in Vietnam, as it was in the film, with similar results. It's a nasty one.
That's really a nasty one. Have you seen that film?
Jacob's Ladder is an absolutely brilliant film.
It's really cool.
I mean,
Boys and girls.
Jacob's Ladder.
Who stole the sausages?
It was Jacob.
Naughty crocodile. Okay, so after we got rid of the naughty crocodile,
honestly,
we can go back to discussing MK Ultra. And this, of course, falls under the umbrella of psychotronic warfare.
Psychotronic warfare, ladies and gentlemen.
Sounds like something out of, like, the Terminator.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Or Transformers movies or something.
It's brilliant. I'm loving this.
It's cool, isn't it?
It's just so weird.
Yeah, right?
Where were we? The phrase psychotronic warfare is frequently found in theories and alternative ideologies. It refers to the notion that some people or organisations are employing cutting-edge technologies such as the use of radar, electromagnetic radiation and surveillance methods to remotely target and control the feelings, ideas and bodily experiences of particular people. Frequently for evil intentions, to cause bodily harm, implant sound and ideas into people's minds, make someone hear words in their heads and use them as psychotronic weapons that have the potential to injure, kill, and do all the actions as the controller wants.
Now, there is no doubt that during the Cold War, the Soviets and the US and other countries were conducting human experiments using many kinds of drugs and electromagnetic radiation to find ways to control the human mind and make it work as they want. But there is not enough evidence to prove whether they fully succeeded or not. And let's be honest, even if they had have done, they're not going to tell us.
They're not going to reveal it, are they? So you can imagine somewhere in a file locked away, there's going to be the information that says, actually, this shit works and we're still using it.
There's so much locked away files.
Some of the stuff they do. I mean, this is all, we're talking about 1960s, 1950s, 1970s.
Oh, yeah.
They're still doing this stuff.
Of course they are.
They're just not talking about it.
And many more things. Look, yeah. I've mentioned Musk before, but if Musk can do implants into human brains successfully,
yeah,
what the hell are the government up to?
That would just
be my question.
Yeah, it's a worry, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There were elements of psychotronic warfare experiments that didn't make it into use by the military, however. One of which was the use of music and subliminal messages, which includes the use of the children's song I Love You from Barney and Friends on Iraqi prisoners of war, and the alleged use of music and subliminal messages at the 1993 Waco siege and other FBI operations. So what they do, basically, they play these things on an endless loop into the prison cells. They were doing it as, I think it's the Al-Gharab prison in Baghdad, and they also did it in Guantanamo Bay as well. I think in Guantanamo they used AC/DC, they'd play the music at full volume, non-stop. They'd leave the lights on, just sort of really do the people's heads in. So I have to ask you, ladies and gentlemen, what tune would drive you insane or torture you into revealing your secret information?
I'm sure there's quite a list.
There's going to be quite a list. And in fact, if you want to tell us, you can always email us. In fact, email us because we'd love to know.
And what's our email address?
It's outtheregroup@icloud.com. So yeah, okay. Go on, email us and tell us the song that would get the information out of you.
Okay, so time to climb down from our drug-induced high. Turn off the microwaves and turn the music down. Because we need to focus our minds, clear our thoughts, and take a look into the Stargate Project files.
Stargate was a codename for a secret US Army unit established in 1978 at Fort Meade, Maryland, by the Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, and SRI International, a Californian contractor, to investigate the potential for psychic phenomena in military and domestic intelligence applications. The project and its precursors and sister projects went by various code names: Gondola Wish, Grill Flame, Centerlane, Sunstreak, Scan-8, until 1991, when they were consolidated and rechristened as the Stargate Project.
Now, this project focused on remote viewing, and that involves someone known as a remote viewer seeing an object, person, or place from a great distance with one's mind or via an out-of-body experience. Now, this unique project involved the use of Army personnel who were, in effect, trained to demonstrate clairvoyance on demand, mentally travelling all over the world in search of terrorists, kidnap victims, hostages, crashed military aircraft, secret Soviet bases, and much more besides.
Top secret psychic experiments have been going on for decades in the USA. In 1952, Dr. J.B. Ryan conducted the Army's ESP tests. In the 1970s, the CIA and NSA worked with researchers to test psychic abilities, hoping to create a perfect spy who could wander the world in their mind without leaving the room.
That sounds so cool.
It does.
Now, many evolutions occurred throughout the project, and in addition to some speed bumps along the way, some professionals who were assisting with CIA's psychic programs were found to be frauds, including a certain, dare I say it, Uri Geller.
Mr. Spoonbender himself.
Now, a BBC documentary, The Secret Life of Uri Geller, suggests CIA and Mossad spies tapped his paranormal skills for decades, including during a mission to release 100 hostages trapped in Uganda's Entebbe Airport in 1976. Now, Geller's psychic skills were also tested for 8 days in 1973 as part of the CIA's Stargate program. But you've guessed it, there were questions asked about his abilities.
As Project Stargate evolved, so did the technique involved in remote viewing. CIA psychic spies would have differing levels of success for each method. There are three categories that Stargate-controlled remote viewing would focus on. Coordinate remote viewing, CRV, was a method that asked viewers what they would see at a specific coordinate. Extended remote viewing, ERV, was a method that combined relaxation and meditation. Written remote viewing, WRV, combined channeling and automatic writing. This technique was widely regarded as much less reliable and was a source of controversy ever since its inception in 1988.
Now, an example of the Stargate Project proving to be successful is with its most renowned remote viewer, Joseph McMoneagle. Now, McMoneagle was formerly in the Army as a warrant officer before being selected to become a psychic participant in 1978. Now, over time, McMoneagle established himself as the best psychic in the Stargate program and, of course, the entire world. He not only was the headline for the Stargate program, but also the clearest evidence of psychic phenomena to the CIA. Under the National Security Council, McMoneagle used remote viewing to identify the undisclosed Soviet base and accurately described Russia's new nuclear submarine, the Typhoon, in 1981. Another example of Mook Monegal's abilities is when he helped identify the location of kidnapped American General James Dozier with no information.
But in the end, controversies would see Project Stargate come to an end in 1995. Many projects failed or had loopholes that were later debunked. The reliability of many techniques and operatives was questionable at best. Even Mook Monegal, the top remote viewer, had many claims that he could not back up with additional source information. See, that's another odd one, isn't it? Because they're saying, oh, it didn't work. But then they're saying, well, it did work, because you've got instances there where he's actually got information correct.
Exactly.
And when I was doing the research for this, there were other sections as well where they said that they found things that were sort of very close to what they'd actually discovered later on down the line. So
there's definitely something in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
It's really weird.
There's too many people with psychic abilities to rule it out completely.
Yes,
there's definitely something going on. What is going on, we don't know yet.
No.
And how it happens and why it happens, we don't know yet. But there's definitely something.
It's really, really interesting. I mean, just sort of when I was researching this and going through and looking out for stuff, I mean, it's just the sheer volume of things that I found.
Yeah.
It's just like, wow.
Huge.
I just never realised how much of this there
and
was.
A lot of it got destroyed as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we will never actually know.
Exactly what happened. And a lot of it is still classified.
But there's still, I mean, you know, I've heard that the FBI still use psychics up to this day to help solve murder crimes and stuff.
Yeah. They're still doing the rounds. There's still stuff going on. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
We need to be taken seriously, guys, us psychics. We're not all jokers and clowns.
Exactly. There's unfortunately there, like in every field, there's certain elements that give you a bad name.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, but it's sort of clearing out the dross and looking at the sort of the genuinely gifted people, and there are genuinely gifted people out there. So, pack up your kit bags, ladies and gentlemen, because you are about to join the 1st Earth Battalion and become a new age super soldier. We even have our own manual to help you along the way.
Our manual is a 125-page mixture of drawings, graphs, maps, polemical essays, and I don't know what they are, and point-by-point redesigns of every aspect of military life. We have designed a new battlefield uniform that includes pouches for ginseng regulators, divining tools. We have foodstuffs to enhance your night vision and a loudspeaker that automatically emits indigenous music and words of peace to help you on your mission. That sounds like my kind of kit.
It's the unit you want to join, isn't
it? It's damn fine.
That's it. 1st Earth Battalion. Yeah. The 1st Earth Battalion was a name proposed by Lieutenant Colonel Jim Channon, a US soldier who had served in Vietnam, for his idea of a new military of super soldiers to be organised along New Age lines. According to a book by journalist John Ronson, Channon spent time in the 1970s with many of the people in California credited with starting the Human Potential movement, and subsequently wrote an operations manual for the 1st Earth Battalion.
Now, Channon believed the army could be the principal, moral and ethical basis on which politics could harmonise in the name of the Earth. Now, he declared that the 1st Earth Battalion's primary allegiance was to the planet Earth. Channon envisioned that the 1st Earth Battalion would organise itself informally, uniforms without uniformity, structure without status, and unity powered by diversity. And members, of course, would be multicultural, with each race contributing to rainbow power.
He also proposed as a guiding principle that members of the 1st Earth Battalion seek non-destructive methods of conflict resolution because their first loyalty is to the planet. So, warrior monks of the 1st Earth Battalion, are you ready to swear to uphold a credo of high commandos and guerrilla gurus?
Repeat after me. I have the capacity and therefore the duty to contribute to the development of myself, my associates, and our planet simultaneously now. I will organize a self-supporting high commando group that will create and perform evolutionary breakthrough actions on behalf of the people and planet. One people, one planet. I will then pass on this concept to others who are capable of generating further self-organizing commando teams. I will await the time when my group can connect naturally with others at higher and higher levels of awareness and performance. The Natural Guard.
Phew-wee. I have a sneaking suspicion that Lieutenant Colonel Channon just might have dropped a few tabs of LSD from the MK Ultra stash. This is the result of the trip he took.
Far out, man.
In the last story, you mentioned a book by journalist John Ronson. This book is well worth a read, as it covers many of the stories you have mentioned here. The title of this book is The Men That Stare at Goats. The book was turned into a TV series in 2004 by Channel 4 entitled Crazy Rulers of the World. And as you might have guessed, as usual, we have saved the weirdest story until the end of our episode.
Hell yeah, that's what we always do,
Yeah, there's always a good one right at the end.
Okay, so whilst researching for his book, Ronson interviewed a number of former and current US military personnel. And in doing so, he stumbled across this totally mental tale. Shoot, Nige.
Say hello to Albert Stubblebean.
What?
Albert Stubblebean.
Okay.
It's a name and a half on it.
Isn't it?
Retired Army Major General, a career military intelligence officer, a proponent of psychic warfare, levitation.
Really?
Spoon bending.
Uh-huh.
Walking through walls. Mm-hmm. And staring at goats.
Staring at goats.
Until they died.
Oh, wow.
Yes, you did hear that correctly.
Okay. Animals! General Albert Stubblebine III said, while explaining his psychic training plans to US Special Forces commanders in 1983. Stopping the hearts of animals! Bursting the hearts of animals! The general's outburst was met with stony silence. Stubblebine feared he'd gone too far. A year later, he retired early, convinced his bleating had come to nothing.
What the general didn't know was that America's Green Berets were deadly serious about testing his goat idea. Just a few hundred yards down the road from where the Special Forces brass gathered that day, the US was housing 100 de-bleated goats.
De-bleated goats?
De-bleated goats.
How do you de-bleat a goat?
I have no idea. And
what?
I don't think I want to know.
Okay.
Animals, apparently, who could open and close their mouths without emitting a sound. Top secret goats.
Goodness sake.
Honestly, you can't make this up, can you? The top secret goats, forever sworn to silence, were used by the Green Berets in battle training exercises. If Americans could somehow learn to stare goats into the ground, they might be able to do the same with enemy forces.
Okay, so Green Berets, silent goats, and American soldiers staring at the silent goats.
You've got it.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
It all will become apparent as we go through the story. Don't
uh-huh.
worry.
Okay.
There is purpose and meaning to this.
So it seems that General Stubblebine commanded a
secret military psychic spying unit from 1981 to 1984. Basically, six soldiers in a condemned building in Fort Meade, a black op that didn't officially exist.
By the mid-1980s, however, Special Forces had undertaken a secret initiative to create super soldiers. Officers with superpowers who could walk into a room and be instantly aware of every detail. Special Forces didn't stop there, however. There were levels beyond superpowers, including heightened intuition and invisibility, although merely remaining unseen was acceptable. And of course, there were the goat experiments. At least one intelligence officer had stopped a goat's heart in a deadly stare-off at the military's secret goat lab.
Oh, come off it. Military secret goat lab. Are you serious?
I'm serious.
What the heck? Okay, so what is this mysterious goat lab? Well, the goat lab was part of the Special Warfare Center and school at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, where green berets shot goats in the leg and learned how to treat wounds, deal with trauma cases, and address other types of battlefield injuries. Poor goats.
I know, it's horrible, isn't it?
It's harsh.
Shoot the goat, band him up, he's all right.
Now, the progression to goat staring was inspired by someone we met earlier. Oh, yes, it's the hippy-trippy Lieutenant Colonel Jim Channon. Him again.
He's back.
Author of the First Earth Battalion Field Manual, who liked to encourage aspiring super soldiers to embrace their psychic powers and, of course, be in touch with their inner self.
We have to ask, of course, who was the vaunted goat slayer, the soldier able to drop a goat with a steely stare?
Over to John Ronson to spill the beans.
I discovered that the main goat starer was a man called Guy Savelli. And I said, is it true that you managed to kill a goat by staring at it? And he said, yes. And I said, do you still practice the technique? And he said, as a matter of fact, only last week, I killed my hamster just by staring at it.
Really? So, okay, so he's staring at goats and killing them. Oh, but that isn't enough. Let's pick on the bloody hamster.
Well, he has to keep, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Don't worry. So he played me a tape of him staring at his hamsters, apparently, for 3 days.
What? He was just staring at a hamster for 3 days?
Yeah.
3 days full stop, solidly.
Yep.
No sleep, no eating, just 3 days staring at a hamster.
Yep.
Really?
He's a super soldier.
Really?
You have to remember that. I don't just die straight away. And sure enough, about halfway through the tape, one suddenly just dropped to the floor. And I said, oh, you've done it. And he said, yeah.
You probably died of starvation. You know, we don't know how old the hamster was.
No, actually.
It could be a geriatric hamster. He'd starve to death for days.
He's okay. Because then, you know, just before the tape ended, the hamster gets up, brushes itself down and carries on eating.
Oh, for goodness sake. And there was me getting all excited, thinking he was murdering elderly pension hamsters.
He's killed the hamster. No, he hasn't. Oh, dear.
Good Lord. So while Savelli also claimed he killed a goat during a government-controlled experiment, he admitted the wrong goat had died. Number 17 instead of number 16. Now, because he was having trouble, apparently, concentrating, Savelli couldn't verify that claim either, however. A videotape Savelli offered to Ronson as proof involved a different experiment where no animals died. So there was no hamsters and no goats then?
No.
Okay.
We only got this word, this story doing the rounds, that there's one person that managed to stare a goat and kill it, stare at a goat long enough for it to die.
I mean, why would you?
Yeah. Well, the...
I mean, okay, I get experiments were taking place. I can just about fathom a goat thing, but a hamster thing? A hamster thing? Really?
It was just Savelli, you know, keeping his eye in. practicing.
Okay. All right.
I love this story. This is so stupid.
Right?
But I mean, imagine if they...
Well,
no.
It's real.
I know that...
This is not made up.
It's not invention. It's actually true.
Oh, my God.
Completely true.
Oh, God.
I mean, Ronson said, I believe all the historical stuff about them trying out this stuff. I've seen enough documentation to know they really were trying to kill goats by staring at them. And those experiments happened, but what I don't believe is that any of them worked.
Why did they pick goats?
Well, I suppose they had the goats there already.
Well, couldn't it have been a sheep?
Well, I suppose, but they already had the de-bleated goats that they were shooting for their battle training.
Sort of. Why goats?
I don't know.
You know?
It could have been anything. We just spoke the goats were conveniently there, which is why they used them.
Why do they de-bleat them? It's just odd.
Well, so when you're quite merrily shooting goats all the time...
Merrily shooting goats. Well, how often do you go out merrily shooting goats? You make it sound like, oh, well, I'm just going out to merrily shoot a goat. Really? What's the last time, Nige?
I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, I have never shot a goat.
Merrily.
Merrily. Or in any other way. I am not a goat shooter, nor a goat slayer, and I've not stared a hamster to death either.
I was going to ask you about the hamsters. No, I was about to say, what about the hamsters?
I've had a hamster that died, but I've never stared him to death. Oh, they do eventually, don't they?
Well, everything does eventually.
Exactly.
But you weren't staring at it, right?
No.
Okay, fair enough.
I woke up in the morning, there he was.
Aww.
Stiff as a board.
Are you sure he wasn't hibernating?
No, he was on his ladder.
Are you sure he wasn't hibernating?
And if he was so sort of... No, he was definitely... Rigor mortis are setting because he was like entwined in the ladder.
I used to have a hamster.
Did you?
Yeah, and I had a gerbil called Bup.
Here we go, boys and girls.
I know.
Pet tails.
Yeah.
I know. Off on a tangent. But anyway, I'm presuming the goats were used because they were there. They already had them for the experiment.
Oh, little thing.
The things they were doing, shooting them and dressing the wounds and stuff. And I think the reason why they got these specially de-bleated goats, they didn't make a noise when they were being shot. It's horrible.
Why did they have to shoot them and then do that? Why couldn't they just use pretend models or something?
Because they want the reality of the blood.
For God's sake.
I don't know.
Poor little things.
I'm not an American Special Forces Green Beret. I have no idea why they want to do these things.
Flippin' heck.
Yeah.
It's horrible, isn't it?
It's Americans, they like shooting things.
Now.
I'm sorry.
Shooting goats and killing hamsters by staring at them.
But he didn't.
Thankfully.
The hamster didn't die.
No, I know.
He got up and finished his dinner.
Poor little thing.
After 3 days of staring.
Dear me.
There we go. Throughout this episode, we have delved into the batshit crazy world of psychic warfare, as you may have gathered listening to some of these stories. However, we've only tiptoed around the edges, and we positively encourage all our listeners to take their own trip into this fascinating world. You really should do it because it is, honestly...
But avoid hamsters and goats,
yeah,
okay?
No goat shooting, no goat staring, no hamster staring.
No.
Okay. You can make yourself your own first Earth Field Battalion manual, complete with ginseng pockets in your uniform.
No LSD, people.
No, don't drop LSD. That's not wise. And I really wouldn't encourage, you know, prostitutes around your house so you can film them through a two-way mirror.
Don't look so excited, Nigel.
Well, I suppose she's mates with LSD and drinking cocktails.
You should see Nigel's face right here. It's like, oh, yeah. I wouldn't encourage that.
I quite like that idea. No, I don't. Stop it. I've lost myself now. But anyway, like I was saying, have a look into it yourself because we have only sort of tiptoed around the edges. We haven't sort of dived.
It's fascinating.
Right in.
Isn't it?
It is absolutely mad. And to help you along the way, we've stuck a load of links in the episode description on the website. So go and have a look at the links and click on them and have a look because there are some really mental stories. I've also included a link that will enable you to watch the 2004 TV series that we mentioned, A World's Gone Crazy or something, that was based on the John Ronson book. Is psychic warfare now just history? Well, even to this day, you can still find headlines like this cropping up.
A Russian defense ministry report claims its elite soldiers can crash computers with their minds and read documents inside a safe after mastering telepathy from dolphins.
You really can't make this stuff up. Well.
Yeah, right. Well, what is there to say? Where do you start?
I mean, you couldn't possibly take that to pieces, can you, and analyse it?
Not really, no.
Completely mad. But I actually really enjoyed researching it.
Mm.
Because it was so interesting. I fell down quite a few rabbit holes. The problem on the back of this is you find ideas for other podcasts.
And a few goat holes as well, I think.
Keep away from the goats. But I was researching this, I started looking at Nazi teams that are researching into like German myths and all this kind of stuff.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, really. I don't want to fall down that rabbit hole, stay away from that one. But yeah, it's a different episode. It's not our usual fare, nor UFOs or ghosts or cryptids, but it's all part and parcel of the paranormal.
Oh, really? Yeah. And for sure.
I think it's good that we got to share these stories because then you got to sort of talk a little bit about how you work as well. And I think it's quite important that people understand that the things that you do and the things that you say.
I don't even understand how I work.
Well, to give people an idea of what happens, because
sure.
It's difficult to put it into words, but then I think you did a really good job at the beginning of the
really
podcast.
Yeah. But it's hard for me to kind of explain it. It just happens. It doesn't happen all the time.
No.
And I think if anyone is looking to expand on their abilities, it's always very good to learn control and to learn how to have the ability to start it and stop it, to switch it on and switch it off. That was one of the first techniques that I learned, and it's really very important in this field because you don't want to be tuned in all the time because it's exhausting, quite frankly, and you end up incredibly tired. So, if you're looking to expand your abilities or anything like that, please, first thing to train yourself. If you want to tune in, learn how to tune out. That's really important.
Yeah, because you get stuck in that loop and can't get out.
Well, that's the thing, and it's not healthy.
No, really. Not at all.
It really isn't healthy, and you've got to have control over it as well, and, have a normal life. I'm not going to say my life is normal because it isn't, but as normal as possible, have your family life, normal life, whatever, and tune in when you need to tune in, and remember to tune out when it's time to tune out.
So another episode in the bag. But
I know we've got something really exciting coming up.
We're planning another episode, another out and about there episode.
We're going to try and do a recording of us being out somewhere, aren't we?
Investigating
somewhere. So when we trip over or fall, you'll hear it.
Yeah.
When we get scared, you're going to hear it. You'll know.
We're good at that. We're very good at getting scared. Our last adventure, if you go down to the woods, for those of you who listened to it.
That was brilliant.
If you haven't, go listen to that episode because it's exactly what we're going to do again. We're going to record ourselves out on an investigation.
Yeah.
But this time, we've decided to give all our lovely listeners the chance to decide
Where we're going to go.
We're going to run a poll on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, on Insta and on Facebook, on all our social media feeds, giving a choice of locations. And what we want you to do is to pick which one we go to.
Oh, God help us.
I know.
Please be kind.
Yes. We've done this before. We actually went out and filmed an investigation. We ended up at a ruined church, which is Divitshaw.
We did.
And we offered it on our Facebook group and said, where would you like to send us? And they sent us to this ruined church, ended up being an interesting evening.
Yeah, right.
And if you want to see the video of that one, that's actually on our YouTube channel too. So,
So we're going to be mic'd up.
Yeah.
And we're going to go to a place of your choosing. You decide.
Yeah, and we're going to run an investigation there. But the other thing I thought might be good fun while we're at it. Why don't you not only choose where we're going to go, but give us some experiments to do while we're there.
Oh, come off it. You've just said that because it's me they're going to be experimenting on.
Of course it is.
Oh, goodness.
So cruel.
We didn't discuss this beforehand.
I know. I love to throw a curveball in, Jules. Oh, I'm good at this. I actually just thought of it, but.
Well, if we're experimenting, they can't see anything. They're only going to hear us.
It's going to have to be something we can do that's audible rather than visual.
Okay. And how do you envisage that to happen?
What you can do, if you have any...
He hasn't thought about this, ladies and gents. Yeah, I saw the look on your face.
If you have any bright ideas for things we can do...
Pass it on to the listeners. That's it. So you haven't really thought about this, have you?
No, it's just an idea that popped into my head, just like that. Yeah. Email us with your ideas. We gave you our email earlier on. Here's our email again. It's outtheregroup@icloud.com. Not only that, if you want to send us anything at all via email, because we'd love to hear your comments anyway, and if we get some lovely comments, then we'll read them out on the podcast too.
Oh, yeah, do that. Exactly. Any stories that you want to share with us as
That's
well.
That's right. We'd love to hear them.
Or, you know, if you want to be interviewed by us, if you have any stories that you want to tell us, then we can put that in a podcast as well.
Yeah.
We're always, always open to ideas.
Exactly.
So, yes, we love to engage, so get in touch.
There we go. As again, our email is outtheregroup@icloud.com. And, yes, we do promise that we will read all the emails. I will answer all the emails. And any really, really spicy ones, we'll read out on the podcast.
Spicy ones?
Well, you know.
Spicy ones? Is that what you're hoping to get out of this knowledge?
Yeah. No, but anything interesting, we'd love to read it. So
please get in touch.
That... Is it from us?
Yeah, we're done.
We are indeed.
We're going to foxtrot Oscar again.
We are.
Leave you in peace.
We're going to go off and maybe drop some LSD and watch prostitutes two-way mirrors drinking cocktails.
I'm off to give your ears a rest.
Thank you very much once again for listening to us. And if you'd like to sort of give us a follow. I forgot what I was going to say, Jules.
Oh, no.
What's the usual thing? I know we go through all this spiel, don't I? Follow us on social media. We're at Twitter, we're at Insta, we're at Facebook. And if you want to go to our podcast, give us a review. That's what I was looking for.
And the website is?
www.outtheregroup.net.
Cool.
And give us a review. Click on the thing that's got like 5 stars and tell us how wonderful we are. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So that's it from me and Jules. So it's good night from me.
And it's good night from me.
Good night.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.